This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I have two guests today, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. I've been following the Federal Communicators Network now for over 20 years, and these are people in agencies responsible for internal and external communications, official communications, for their respective agencies. So, Corey, let's start with you, please.
Hi, I'm Corey Bassett. I'm on the leadership team for the Federal Communicators Network. In my day job, I am the Strategic Communication Director for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Cool.
Hey there, this is Dave Hebert. I am a co-chair on the Federal Communicators Network leadership team, and in my day job at the U.S. Geological Survey is as the head of internal communications and audiovisual communications.
Audiovisual at USGS?
Yes.
Gee, you're not busy.
I do a lot of deferring there to people who actually know how to produce audiovisual. Just make sure they have what they need.
You still have to keep a lot of balls in the air. Let's start with some background on FCN. Again, I've been monitoring it since probably the early 90s, and you guys have been around for a while doing a lot of work that really doesn't get much publicity, if you will.
So you're aware of the fact that we did start in the mid-90s. Al Gore was actually involved in the launch of the FCN. I believe he
okay,
wanted...
Okay, so this was part of the performance review.
I'm really not sure what the official mechanisms were. I know my understanding is that he wanted a community for federal writers and editors to help each other do their jobs and get better at their jobs. And obviously it's evolved a lot since then in terms of the roles of the people involved in the community. But we have been around since then, gone through a variety of leadership teams, and I think some iterations in the way we're structured. But you know, I think the big thing here for people to understand is we are for government, by government. We're entirely volunteer driven. We have no budget. We have no staff. We have no fees. We don't charge for anything.
Professional sharing information.
It's professional sharing information. So we focus on three things: training, sharing best practices, tips, and tricks with our community, and then social events where folks can get together to connect, to do what we were discussing a little bit earlier, with get better at your job, know what else is out there, connect with people who do the same kinds of work you do and have the same challenges.
Okay.
I think it's really important for communicators to be able to share information. It's not just sharing successes, but also sharing the things that didn't work so well. We can all learn from that, and it's a really great opportunity to sort of learn from other folks.
Okay. And just to clarify, the social events are not funded by the government, so no audit is required here.
Nope. Absolutely nobody
not.
Funds anything.
Your time.
Except out of your own pocket and your own time. That's right.
But given the diffuse nature of the government, everybody can attend the social functions, and I'm assuming we're going to get into this, but a lot of your training is virtual.
That's correct.
That's right.
So, but how many members are there in FCN, and really how diffuse is your population? CONUS, OCONUS, Stellar.
We have about 1,000 professionals who are engaged at various levels in the organization, anywhere from following the blog to coming to our webinars. We actually have a very nice range of both agencies and professionals. We have folks who are in public affairs, media spokespeople. We have people in audiovisual. We have strategic communications. We have internal communications. We have photographers. We have writers. We have everything you can sort of think of, and at a wide range of levels, too, which is really nice. Most of the folks are here in D.C., although there are some out in the country. I want to say the average experience level is about 10 years, which is nice. You have people who are very experienced, so that new people coming in, no matter what level of experience they have, they can find someone or find an experience that's going to help them. The other thing I would say is that in terms of the range of agencies, you name it, and the agency is pretty much there.
Railroad Retirement Board in Chicago with 12 people. One of them's probably
all the big ones. Yeah, yeah, all the big ones. All the little ones. Absolutely. Yeah.
That is, I think that's something to note as well. We also have state and local government members. Our leadership team is all federal level, but represented by a nice mix of agencies. We have folks from NIH. We have another USGS leadership team member in addition to myself. We have people from U.S. Department of Agriculture, Defense, Finance, and Accounting Service.
Department of Homeland Security.
Department of Homeland Security.
So, is my friend Margaret Ames from NCI on FCN?
I don't know that I've seen that name.
We can definitely look it up.
We can look it up.
I'll tell her to join.
Please do.
There you go. I actually went out to NCI a couple years ago to talk to them about leveraging social media, and it was, you can imagine how many public affairs type people there are at NCI, and there was like 90 people in the room. We were just primarily talking about LinkedIn. So let's start there then. Training, what kinds of training, and how much of that focuses on virtual versus, you know, standing in front of a mic and camera kind of thing?
Well, we actually have, I'd like to mention a couple of trainings coming up scheduled, one on May 8th at 11 a.m. on law enforcement's use of mobile applications for public safety and other law enforcement activities. I think Corey could speak a little bit more to some of the specific applications we'll be discussing. And then on May 15th, we have another very exciting event at 11 a.m. Eastern on measuring the effectiveness of communications efforts. This is actually a collaboration amongst the FCN and then the FCN's counterparts in the Canadian and British government, which are actually part of those respective nations' prime minister's offices. So we're going to be bringing a variety of perspectives on how to make sure that you're actually communicating effectively through
measuring. As long as you speak English. So.
Right. Yeah. Or French.
Or French,
that's
yeah.
Right.
French. Sorry. very cool. So the digital measurement stuff. So we're getting into data analytics. You know, how many people are you reaching? Are they opening messages? That kind of thing. Give me a little bit of little detail there.
I think I do think there'll be a heavy digital component, but mm-hmm. there are other elements of communication that I don't know that you would strictly say fall in the digital realm that are going to be touched on, whether it's surveying focus groups, looking at sentiment across social media, but probably into media response or survey response. We have some colleagues in the British government who used a term, I believe it was horizon scanning.
Yes.
Is something they do. And I thought that was interesting. It's sort of forecasting reactions or behaviors ahead of time to see sort of where communications activities might be more effective.
And who wouldn't want a crystal ball, right? So it'd be very exciting to talk about ways to look at what you're currently doing, take those measurements, and then extrapolate out, what does this mean in the future? How can we, in essence, get ahead of something? I mean, that's the gold standard, right? How do you get ahead of it?
That's amazing. So we're having back-to-back webinars, basically, here. I'm assuming you don't do a webinar every week.
No.
That's not typical.
That would be a little much.
Yeah, because we do rely on volunteers. Right. The schedule can be a little wonky. We're also working on, I should mention, I think, seven other training events really deliberately right now, including Twitter pitching to journalists, which may involve one of your fellow hosts here at Federal News Radio, which I'll just throw that teaser in there
cool.
for now. Accessibility.
A couple of them are pretty good at that stuff.
Accessibility. So making sure that mm-hmm. folks are presenting information in a way that are accessible and usable by folks with disabilities. Plain language training, writing and editing, including visual storytelling, AV production for novices. You know, you can shoot full high definition video now with an iPad. I think a lot of people are realizing you don't need a full blown budget breaking production to do AV. Communicating change. Things are always changing, but big change can be difficult to communicate. And then media training for scientists. So actually training PR folks to work with technical specialists to make sure that their information is understandable and meaningful to the public. So those are a few of the irons we have in the fire right now.
Back to your plain speaking thing, yeah.
Yeah, and while we're also very full of good ideas, we also welcome ideas from all kinds of folks. And we get ideas from our members all the time. So it's not like we're sitting around with our own ideas. We definitely welcome suggestions, thoughts from different communities of practice within the communications realm.
Cool, very cool. I'm probably connected with more FCN members on LinkedIn than I realized, but, you know, just thinking on it, private sector and public sector people who've been involved in digital communications really very early to now. You know, Maxine Teller springs to mind. She's a industry person, but she works in agencies, and she's very well versed in these things. And when I get confused, I usually reach out and say, "What the heck is this?"
Yeah, to Corey's point, if I may, a lot of this training, the interest, you know, sort of understanding what our users are interested in, happens very organically, which I think to a certain extent it has to, given, as you were saying, Mark, how quickly these things evolve. So an issue will come up, someone will raise a question on our email listserv, for example, and then there's a flurry of activity and we say, it looks like people might want to have a conversation about this. So we'll just reach back out and say, you know, I might say, email me directly if you'd like for us to investigate a training on this. And if we get enough people responding, we'll say, okay, well, let's put this on the list of something to develop.
How long's the list?
The list is a little over 650 people at this point.
No, I mean the list of topics.
Oh, the list of topics.
slightly less than 650.
Yeah. Yeah, slightly less than 650, somewhere between that and 10, probably list of things that we're earnestly pursuing at this point. So
there you go. You're listening to AM Tower Off Center on Federal News Radio. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AM Tower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Again, I have a tag team here from the Federal Communicators Network, Corey Bassett of ICE and Dave Hebert of Geological Survey. Geological Survey has always been one of my favorite agencies just because I used to do some work with Jerry McFall back in the 90s and early 2000s. When he was disseminating information on the brand new CD technology. Very cool stuff. Which, by the way, back then was a best practice, which is now my segue into, let's talk about some best practices for, you guys tread, and no pun intended, on really thin ice here. Communicating with the public from your position, I admire your tact. I lack tact completely, so I admire those who have it and can employ it. So let's give me some of your best practices. What do you do out there? How do you share this stuff, and how do you deploy it?
One of the big things that we look at is a multi-layered approach. I think it's easy to get caught up in, you put out a press release and everybody who's anybody is going to read it and see it. What we found is that it's not enough just to send out a release, electronic email someone a news release. Anytime we do any kind of media plan, it's a lot of different things. We're adding social media to that. We're adding tweets. We're adding a post on Facebook. We're putting, visuals on our website. We're putting visuals other places where media can download a high resolution version of that. And that's just so important. In these days, the media is strapped as well in terms of staffing and budget and that kind of thing. And the more that, as a communicator, we can provide all the ingredients for them to do the story, the more likely they are to be able to do that story. And for us, it's being able to really produce high quality visuals. It's the HD video. It's nice pictures that tell the story. It's all the pieces that they might need to be able to put that story together. So, we know that by using this multi-layered approach, we're reaching a lot of different audiences. It's not just the media, it's the general public. Like, we want the general public to know what we do and how we do things. And so being able to put those things out on Facebook, put those things out on Twitter, it really reaches sort of that broader audience.
Yeah, and for you at ICE, your directed communications to the public probably impact more border areas than Kansas, Nebraska, Maryland.
You'd be surprised. It impacts a lot.
Yeah, so cool.
So I think maybe an informal goal that we'd have on the FCN, to Corey's point, is, we have a lot of people, as Corey mentioned, with 10, even 20 years experience, who are very well versed in navigating bureaucracy in order to communicate the government mission and in communicating in the written word. I think our goal in the FCN would be to shift everyone to becoming as adept at digital communication and communicating through digital media as they have been with navigating that bureaucracy and communicating in the written word. So, I think part of that is that recognition that the definition of media or a media outlet has shifted dramatically. One tech expert with 500,000 followers on Twitter is a media outlet, essentially.
Right.
So we can't look at the way we disseminate our information and the people that we interact with the same way we used to. In many cases, we are having direct transactions with citizens, and that's really how government should work in a lot of ways. As Corey said, a big role for the communicator these days is getting people straight to data and information that help them in their personal and their professional lives in whatever form they can figure out to do with it. So it's not a matter of controlling. You can only use these data in this way, but it's a matter of saying, here's a bunch of stuff that we have produced as a government that we think is useful. Let us work with you to find out ways that you can make it even more useful and build new things out of it that sort of we never imagined doing with it. I think that's an important role. It's sort of abstractly put for the federal communicator to be playing right now.
And one of the challenges, so as Dave was saying, you know, everything is social media and all this kind of stuff. You know, you need to be prepared to be able to put content on your social media. So one of the things that I think communicators sometimes have a challenge with is, well, they've got a Twitter account, they've got a Facebook account, why, you know, we should have one too. Well, without a plan, without content to put on it, without really sort of thinking through how you're going to use it, it's not going to work, because social media is a tool, just like any other thing is. It's a tool, and you need to be able to understand what it does and how to use it to make it effective. And so that's one of the things that we hope through some of our trainings to be able to help communicators really sort of sort out, is Twitter the best thing for us? Maybe Instagram is a better option for us, or maybe Facebook, or maybe not. I mean, it's really dependent on the resources, on the content, who you're trying to reach out for as your audience. So it depends on a lot of things.
Yeah, and the have a plan kind of thing. I've been teaching people how to use LinkedIn since 2008. I've been on since 2004. And the first thing in my workshops is, what do you want to accomplish? What are your goals here? Exactly. And they, you know, you get this blank stare. I've been there for 3 years.
Right.
I'm already doing stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Does it have a direction?
Yeah. You know, and one of the big questions is, who's your audience? And it's always surprising when you talk to someone and they hadn't even thought about the audience. It's, well, who are you trying to talk to? Who are you trying to talk to, and what is it you're trying to get them to do? And that's more sort of a marketing perspective. And, you know, that's the other thing, is that one of the things that we do is we do a lot of sort of marketing. And for a law enforcement agency, you know, that's one of the big sort of upcoming things to look at. It's not just enough to enforce the law, but it's really educating people on why whatever this particular behavior is or whatever it is isn't right. One of the big things that we do is combat child exploitation. And, you know, we've embarked on a big campaign to educate teachers and parents and students on online safety. You know, how does that relate back to us? Well, if the folks who need that information are able to, if they're approached by a predator, report that or not have that happen, that's one less bad guy that we have to go get off the streets.
Right. Cool.
I think one way that I look at this is meeting people where they are. There was a point in time where several years ago, I feel like I was in a lot of conversations about the web that sort of centered around this notion of building really cool government websites that people would want to come hang out on. Well, government websites are not Facebook. People are not going to come and just spend time hanging out on them. They're there to do something. And so I think I have seen this recognition, thankfully, that that people are spending time in other places, and we can't expect them to come to us. We've got to go to them. And those, and in this case, I mean, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or what have you. And then two, as Corey was saying, how is it that people interact with information in those places, and how can we sort of tailor what we're delivering them to meet that? In many cases, Mark, you talked about what's your goal. You find out through that conversation that Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn don't have a lot of utility for the goal that a person is trying to accomplish, and they need to do something entirely different.
Yeah, it's a great push mechanism for some agencies like NASA and anything to do with outer space.
Yes.
So, National Park Service has some great stuff on their Twitter account. Just gorgeous pictures.
Oh, beautiful photos. Yeah. Little shout out to my people at the Department of the Interior there. They have
there
a fantastic photo collection.
Oh, yeah, I follow it. It's fabulous.
On Instagram and Twitter.
Does Forest Service do that at Ag too? Do they have? I mean,
I'm not sure.
They have
actually
some pretty neat things to send out visually.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine they do, but I'm not sure specifically what they
we'll find
their
out.
Outlets.
It's interesting, even on things like Twitter and Facebook. You know, we find that if there's a visual with something, it gets way more eyeballs than just, you know, tweeting out a bunch of words and some text. So we definitely, you know, in terms of best practice, including visuals in whatever you're sending out on social media, makes a huge difference.
You've known this for years, though, because you have in-house or retainer professional photographers. You never send out a photo of somebody who's a new appointee that looks like it should come with theme music from Chucky or something. You know? But that's true, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know
that visual is the first thing people go to, regardless of what, oh, no, I always read first. No, you don't. You look at the picture first.
You look at the pictures,
first.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. Very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think government has a lot of room to tell more stories mm-hmm. visually, whether it's through photography or video or even infographics. I mean, mm-hmm. how many government processes would make so much more sense to people if laid out in a really sharply executed infographic? Mm-hmm. And some agencies have done a great
really
job.
Hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And, well, I'm assuming that's one of your best practices, showing people in agencies how to develop infographics, taking all of that data and chunking it down literally into, for lack of a better word, a sound bite, a visual bite.
We one of the things we sort of talk about is, would your grandmother understand this, right? So you break it down to, if you can explain something very complex to your grandmother and have her go, yeah, I got that, then you're on the right track.
Right.
You got a winner.
We do have, as I mentioned before, we are exploring a training about visual storytelling. So I think it'll touch specifically on just what you described. How do you combine words and images to better tell a story or explain a process or what have you?
Okay, very cool. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Where can people find FCN?
I'm glad you asked. I guess I would call our home base our blog/website. That's www.fedcomnetwork.org. And I think you can find everything else you'd want to know about the FCN on that site.
Two M's or one in com?
Two.
Two.
Good question.
Glad I asked. Fedcomnetwork.org?
Yes. And that's our Twitter handle as well, is at fedcomnetwork.
Okay. And there is a group on LinkedIn, as I recall.
That's right.
There is indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Facebook as well?
We do not have a Facebook presence.
Okay. You're better off on LinkedIn,
Twitter.
I believe.
Yeah.
It's where your pros are, and it's where a lot of govies are right now.
Right.
And again, you're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, fedcomnetwork.org. Visit. Back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm with Corey Bassett of ICE and Dave Hebert of U.S. Geological Survey. And I've talked about this before. Government moves at a truly glacial pace. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You don't want something this big moving on a dime. But that presents a lot of challenges to you guys in your field. Give me, no pun intended again, tip of the iceberg kind of things here. Because, again, you guys have a heck of an important job, but constraints that are, not even imaginable to me.
One of the things that we find is that, the public's expectation of the flow of information based on their personal experience in social media can be very challenging to meet, I think. Particularly, in our case, we do criminal investigations, and while, people in the neighborhood might see activity going on, and that can spread through Twitter and Facebook immediately before we have an opportunity to, be able to put out an official statement. I mean, that takes some time to make sure that we have the facts correct. What can we actually say? Is it an ongoing criminal investigation, et cetera? So that can really be a challenge, And by the time we are able to have something cleared and out there, the Twitter sphere, as it were, has blown up with all kinds of rumors and speculation about what is or is not happening. Right. And the other thing, too, is that, people think that the only thing that we do is immigration. And a large part of what we do is also the customs enforcement. It's all the criminal investigation. So people will naturally, many times just assume it's something immigration related. And it's not that at all. But the process that we have to go to ensure that we have a correct and accurate response in the public takes longer than it takes for the neighbor down the street to tweet, oh, my gosh, there's flashing lights at that house down there.
Well, they can do the oops at the Or just ignore the fact that they were wrong. You can't.
Exactly. The penalty for being wrong is much larger in our case.
Possibly a seat at my least favorite building.
Indeed.
Capitol Hill.
I actually have a good story along these lines for something that I think we do fairly quickly at the U.S. Geological Survey. A couple of years ago, a very prominent tech blogger noted that after an earthquake had happened, that Twitter was much quicker at quote-unquote reporting the earthquake than the U.S. Geological Survey was. And he noted that, you know, how quickly tweets came from the area, and then the fact that it took us, I think, 3 to 5 minutes to put together a comprehensive assessment of the earthquake. Now, somebody else, another prominent tech figure, jumped in to say, but here's the difference. On Twitter, all you're hearing is, OMG earthquake. My house is shaking. Okay, well, that is a useful piece of data. But what we provide after a few minutes is where it happened, a fairly reliable estimate of how much damage it might have caused in dollars and in human losses or human casualties. And we provide that information up on the web for everybody to grab. And I think in a few minutes, that's actually pretty good if you compare the value of the information. But it did kind of raise a pretty rousing debate within the USGS about speed versus accuracy. And as Corey said, the government is, we are compelled to be accurate. We've got to provide information people can rely on.
Well, you can't do the eek factor. Eek, something's happening. You know, you're data driven, and you are. And again, this is the part that you do well that I tend to lack is you know, that measured response, and that's absolutely key to your mission.
One of the other challenges, I think, is engaging the public. You know, there's various perspectives within the federal government about to what extent, how will that work, how do you engage the public, you know, and you know, the idea that transparency is good, which I think it is good. I think that there's a lot that the government can share. It's a matter of figuring out the most appropriate ways to do that. You know, in our case, you know, we had cases where there was an individual who we had visual proof of an individual sexually abusing a child. We could not find this individual anywhere. We looked, all our investigators exhausted every lead. We reached out to local, federal, state law enforcement, nothing. So our next turn was like, we need to engage the public. We need to ask for the public's help to find this person. And about a year and a half ago, we engaged on a campaign because it was a John Doe's or John Jane Doe's, as it were, where we would put up bits of visual that were, you know, appropriate for public consumption with whatever information we had and ask the public, can you help us, you know, find this individual? It was actually a case in Oregon. It was one of the first ones we'd actually put up on social media. And in this particular case, we'd put out nationwide, nothing. A couple months. So in those couple months, we had some tips from Oregon that said, I think this person may be in this area. So we put it out again on social media and said, hey, you know, we're looking for this person. This is what they've done. It was a female in this case. And as it turns out, she was contacted by acquaintances and said, did you know, on Facebook, they're saying you did these bad things. She ended up turning herself into local law enforcement in addition to her husband. So the power of the public and being able to have them help us find this individual was amazing. And I mean, from there, it just sort of blossomed, you know, in terms of being able to really engage the public in something that in this day and age, people are looking for a way to engage. They want to be able to help. And what better way to help is to find somebody who's doing bad things to kids.
I mean, yes. And anytime you can take one of those people off.
Absolutely.
The street, and this is where my lack of strength comes. Just shoot them. Yeah, you have the proof. Guilty. Sorry.
So to transition slightly, one of the things we've done at the USGS to respond to that desire Corey was talking about is, for a while, we've had what we call "Did you feel it?" where folks can come on our website and fill out a form where they can describe their experience in an earthquake. Another thing we've done is what we call Twitter earthquake detection, which is using those OMG earthquake tweets to add to the sort of pot of data to determine the sort of felt effect. So it's not on its own a scientifically reliable measure, but when thrown in the mix with other things, it provides a much richer look at the experience of an earthquake in a large urban area, for example.
Well, that way you can also see how far out the tremors went, because if, you know, one person 200 miles away says, oh yeah, I felt it, unless you have verification from, you know, X number of people also 200 miles away, you probably had a truck going by.
And that we do get those.
Yeah,
oh,
I bet you do.
A lot of those. What was that? You know, person may live near a quarry.
Chile, the one down in Chile yesterday, I felt it out in Colombia. Well, it was 8.1.
That's a big one.
That's pretty
it's
big.
A big one.
Yeah.
I think, Corey, when you were touching on the expectations of the public, I think another thing that has happened is as personal devices, phones and computers have become so fast and so capable in very intuitive ways, the expectation is that everything will work that way. And I think in addition to being able to produce things that work in those spheres, like on your iPhone, an application that works as well as the native apps do, is a challenge, as is expectations of things like customer service. So many people interact with companies that they do business with on Twitter, for example, in a customer service sort of interaction. And that can be a very quick and effective way to deal with it. Well, if we as the government are going to wade in there, they're going to expect the same thing from us.
Right.
So, you know, that's a challenge for us. And it's also a caution to be very thoughtful about. If you're going to get in here, you've got to be prepared to meet the expectation.
But again, there's a slightly different metric here in that we don't have any choice in dealing with the IRS. We do have a choice in whether we're buying from Target or Walmart. So if something untoward happens customer service-wise, you can go on Twitter and do a hashtag Walmart, and somebody will probably be in touch. Nobody from IRS is going to buzz you if you give them a bad tweet.
Some agencies are doing a great job, but you do make a good point. I can choose to shop at Walmart or not shop at Walmart. I don't really get to choose whether or not I invest in the federal government as a citizen. And so to a great extent, I think it's a fair expectation that we provide that level of service. What that looks like and how we make it happen and how we overcome some of the policy mandates that you know, can be around or in front of those interactions, that's our challenge.
I think there are some parts of the federal government that are just doing amazing things on social media. I mean, State Department has some great Twitter chats on there.
Let's talk about some success stories after the break.
Okay.
Cool. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests are Corey Bassett and Dave Hebert of the Federal Communicators Network. You can find the Federal Communicators Network online at, Dave?
www.fedcomnetwork.org.
There you go. Back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests are Dave Hebert of Geological Survey and Corey Bassett of ICE. And they are official representatives of the Federal Communicators Network, people who do a tremendous amount of work for both their agencies and the public and get virtually no kudos. So thank you for doing what you do, first of all. You've got a gene pool of 1,000-plus members, federal, state, and local. Sharing information internally in an organization is huge. What are your best practices here?
Well, yeah, let me pontificate about that a little bit first. I think that every way that an organization, whether it's a government agency or a company or a sports team or what have you, interacts with the rest of the world and sort of does its job outwardly is largely affected by what's going on inside. So if it's broken inside, it's going to be broken outside, whether you can see it or not from outside. If it works well inside, it's going to work better outside. So one story along those lines I'd like to share from a FCN, a Federal Communicators Network training event we had a while back, is at the National Archives in their innovation office. They presented to our community about their social intranet. So they worked with a variety of tools to put together sort of a suite of products that support a community that not only can do those sort of typical intranet transactions, where is my benefits information, how do I, you know, log my time and attendance, but also share with each other and problem solve on the fly in order to do what they do better and ultimately to deliver the mission to the public better. At that meeting, I also had an opportunity to speak with someone from the EPA who's pioneering an effort there that I believe they call their skills marketplace, and they're looking to expand it beyond EPA, where you assemble all of the expertise of people across organizations beyond. And I think it's important here as an aside to think of internal, not just at your agency, but internal to government. What are the resources available to you in the people? But to cast a wide net and say, I have a problem. I don't personally or locally have the expertise to deal with that problem. Who's out there that can help me? And I think there are people all over government who are incredibly skilled and talented. And one thing we're doing in the FCN when working with these agencies is figuring out how do you most quickly get those people applied to the right problems. And these folks at Archives and these folks at the EPA are doing just that by trying to create these communities where it's very simple to say, I can do that. I can help you with that. And I know five other people can help you with that. Let's get them over there and let's do it. Let's solve this thing.
Yeah, that's cool because those are two very disparate organizations,
right,
too. I think
right.
of Archives. I think of techies and librarians. I think of EPA. My wife worked at EPA once upon a time. I think of a lot of people out in the field. I know that there's a lot of IT behind it, but there's a tremendous amount of policy there, too. So
I think that's what's really great about the Federal Communicators Network is that it brings together people from lots of different agencies, different missions, different parts of the communication sort of realm to really sort of cross-pollinate those ideas. And you know, sitting at your desk doing the things that you do is great, but the only way to sort of move beyond what you're currently doing is hearing other ideas, is being inspired by someone else's great idea and say to yourself, would that work for me? Is that scalable? Could I make something like that at my agency? How could that help me do what I do every day, you know, in the agency that I sit at? And you really just see a lot of great ideas coming out of the network and people really just sharing their best practices. And it's great to see when one of those ideas actually, you know, takes root and germinates in another agency, or you see, you know, other sort of initiatives that sort of sprouted from that one small idea that was shared amongst all those communicators.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time that somebody posed a question to our network that someone else couldn't answer in at least some substantive manner. And that's great to see. I think that it's a recognition on our part at the FCN and really in these other efforts we've talked about that the issues that government faces, the problems it's trying to help solve are very complicated. Whether you're talking about crime or earthquakes or terrorism, they are multifaceted problems that it stands to reason there's no one entity in government that is wholly suited to deal with them. And so this is something we're trying to leverage in the FCN from a communications perspective. As you look at really complicated problems that government's trying to address, you've got to sort of get past titles and organizational mandates to a great extent and just say, what's the best collection of expertise to address this issue?
The other nice thing is that, you know, there's also some nice partnerships that sort of form between agencies that would not necessarily have existed before because nobody thought about partnering with, you know, this agency or that agency. But you find out there's a lot more similarities, a lot more things you can do together than, you know, going it alone.
So one of the things we did this past year on the FCN to that end was we reached out to GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technology.
Mm-hmm.
They really exist to sort of, I think, facilitate means for government to do a better job of interacting with citizens and delivering the mission, so to speak, through some of these digital tools and other things we've talked about. So what partnering with them has given us is it gave us a listserv. We now have this 650-member email list that we can quickly communicate through and have
Very
learned
cool.
through surveying yeah. that's where people are getting most of their information from
mm-hmm.
us. They can support webinars through their Digital Gov University that we didn't have that before. You know, we're sort of hopping around trying to find who can do a WebEx this week or a GoToMeeting next week. Now we've got these folks to rely on.
And then can you archive those webinars?
Mm-hmm. They record them and post them up to their website. And
you can link to it from your...
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So then they have expertise and connections just on their staff and beyond their staff that we can mm-hmm. take advantage of for subject matter experts to help train and
well, you also have a gene pool of 1,000 people, so collectively you've
right.
got pretty good stuff.
Right, and they have all these other communities, that web managers community.
Yeah.
You know, there are over 3,000 people on that list. We try to make sure that, you know, the circles overlap. If you're looking at a kind of a big Venn diagram that at some point we're going to touch on one of these other issues. So we can reach over to that community and say, hey, can you come over here and help us with something, or could we come over there and help you with something?
Right. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And, you know, from my perspective, again, having watched you guys for, I guess it's just 20 years now, and I'm, you know, thinking back, it probably was spawned from Gore's report of the National Performance Review, because that went in really granularly and how the government does business, how it communicates internally, externally. You know, it was huge for the
smart pay program, just a lot of things that people now take for granted. So, final thoughts?
I think that the value of sharing cannot be underestimated. I think that, if anyone's sitting out there thinking that, they're by themselves in this, they're a one-person shop, which in the federal government, it's not uncommon to have one-person shops out there. So I would say that, if you're sitting out there as a one-person or even a two-person shop, the Federal Communicators Network can really be a valuable resource and tool for you. But as well, your expertise can be used by someone else as well.
Yeah, this community is really only as good as the involvement, given that none of this do this for our day job, so to speak. So the more ideas we have, the more people who are willing to say, hey, I did something that I think worked really well and I'd love to share it with the rest of you, the more people who wanna host an event or write a blog post or retweet for us. This could be something as simple as that. The better off the whole community is.
Cool. Now, do you guys mind if media goes to your website and...
It's a public website, so anybody can go to it.
Well, there you go.
Doors open.
There you go. And again, I want to leave with this thought. The once upon a time in late 90s, early 2000s, the two best known people as federal employees were both TV characters, Cliff Clavin and Newman. And this is not a real grasp of the situation from ground level. You guys are volunteers in your organizations. You bother to try to excel and to help your peers excel. And, God bless you for that, because you do great stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center. If you want to find more about the Federal Communicators Network, FEDCOMM.org, FedComNetwork.org. Go there. And if you're part of the Federal Communicators Network, check out the website for the upcoming webinars and future webinars. This is not my day job. If you are a contractor and you need help on the marketing or social media, I advise on both sides, particularly on LinkedIn. And thank you all very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.